On this 11th day of May, 2011, in San Diego, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We're in Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, and this is text number 222. I have page number 89. The other ones are probably a little bit lower than that. We have two versions of the book. Vasang sijirnani yata vihaya.
Vasang sijirnani yata vihaya.
Navani gunnati nadoparani.
Navani gunnati nadoparani.
Tadashadirani vihaya jirnan.
Tadashadirani vihaya jirnan.
Anyani sangyati navani dehi.
Anyani sangyati navani dehi.
As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Purport. Change of body by the atomic individual soul is an accepted fact. Even the modern scientists who do not believe in the existence of the soul, but at the same time cannot explain the source of energy from the heart, have to accept continuous changes of body which appear from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth and again from youth to old age. From old age, the change is transferred to another body. This has already been explained in a previous verse, 2:13. Transference of the atomic individual soul to another body is made possible by the grace of the supersoul. The supersoul fulfills the desire of the atomic soul as one friend fulfills the desire of another. The Vedas, like the Mundaka Upanishad, as well as the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, compare the soul and the supersoul to two friendly birds sitting on the same tree. One of the birds, the individual atomic soul, is eating the fruit of the tree, and the other bird, Krishna, is simply watching his friend. Of these two birds, although they are the same in quality, one is captivated by the fruits of the material tree, while the other is simply witnessing the activities of his friend. Krishna is the witnessing bird, and Arjuna is the eating bird. Although they are friends, one is still the master and the other is the servant. Forgetfulness of this relationship by the atomic soul is the cause of one's changing his position from one tree to another or from one body to another. The jiva soul is struggling very hard on the tree of the material body, but as soon as he agrees to accept the other bird as the supreme spiritual master, as Arjuna agreed to do by voluntary surrender unto Krishna for instruction, the subordinate bird immediately becomes free from all lamentations. Both the Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.2 and the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 4.7 confirm this. Samane vrikshe purusho nimagno nishaya sochati muhyamanaha jushtang yada pashyat yanyamisham asya mihimanam iti vitashokaha. Although the two birds are in the same tree, the eating bird is fully engrossed with anxiety and moroseness as the enjoyer of the fruits of the tree. But if in some way or other he turns his face to his friend, the Lord, and knows his glories, at once the suffering bird becomes free from all anxieties. Arjuna has now turned his face towards his eternal friend Krishna and is understanding the Bhagavad Gita from him. And thus, hearing from Krishna, he can understand the supreme glories of the Lord and be free from lamentation. Arjuna is advised herewith by the Lord not to lament for the bodily change of his old grandfather and his teacher. He should rather be happy to kill their bodies in the righteous fight so that they may be cleansed at once of all reactions from various bodily activities. One who lays down his life on the sacrificial altar or in the proper battlefield is at once cleansed of bodily reactions and promoted to a higher status of life. So there was no cause for Arjuna's lamentation. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyanandana Shalakya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Vidavedam. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very nice analogy, example, in which we can understand the change of body. In the 2:13, as was referred to in the purport, Krishna has given another very nice description of how the soul goes through different stages in the body. Now, in our own lives, we can understand certainly that we get older, and as we get older, the body changes. But the key to understanding this whole philosophy is to kind of step back from that process and understand that we're watching the body change. Each of us had a 5-year-old body, 10, 15, 20, 25, maybe I'm getting to 30, and on. And if we think, we can remember how we had these bodies. And we had different mind at the time, different ideas, what was important, what's not important, what's fun to do, what's not fun to do. And we can remember some of that, right? So, but obviously the bodies have changed. Our mind has changed. That's also what we call the subtle body. And obviously, the gross or external body has changed. But we are still the same knower of this body, or these bodies. We are the knower of these two things. Uh-oh, we got a cell phone going. Anyone, please turn your cell phone off or on to vibrate. Let him show him where to sit. Show him where to sit.
Okay.
Gotta get up. Give him a seat. So this is a very important first step in spiritual life in general, is to stop identifying with the body and realize that it's just a coat. It's like I put on this dhoti, kurta, and this chadar before I came here. So this is not me, right? It's just a covering of me. And at a certain point, I'll take it off, right? Laundry time, whatever. But I'm still me. So in a similar way, according to this verse we just read, at a certain point, this body, which is a very complicated machine, or in this analogy, a dress, a set of clothes, has to be given up because it just doesn't work anymore. It's just as all machines eventually break down. Everything material has a beginning and an end. Our body, this building, this whole planet, it came into being. It's staying for some time, maybe a long time, but eventually it's destroyed. So what is it that isn't destroyed? That's explained two verses earlier. Najayate, mriyate, vaka, dacha. That for the soul, for this conscious being, there is no birth and no death. By contrast, for the body, there is certainly birth and death. So how did we get in this situation? According to our philosophy, according to the teachings of Krishna, this body is actually extraneous to us. We don't need it. We don't need it to live. The soul is perfectly capable of living separate from any physical covering. And this physical body and the mental body also, subtle matter, is a restriction on the soul. We have this about thousands of times in Prabhupada's books, this word conditioned soul. So when something has conditions on it, it means there are restrictions. The first restriction is we don't live forever. Right? We have a limit on how long we're going to live in this body. But our desire is to live forever. Our desire is not to be killed. Every species of life, and this soul is present not just in human life, every time you see the evidence of consciousness, even these plants, I once read a very fascinating book many years ago called The Secret Life of Plants. Does anyone hear about that book? Secret Life of Plants. And what it was to show that there is so much evidence of consciousness even in plants. They found out that if you have plants at home, I have an apartment, I've had this one plant for like 20 years. It doesn't die. I just keep watering it and give it a little... I cut it, trim it. So that plant, they've shown, they have tests in the lab. If they come to that before that plant and they yell and scream and express anger at that plant, it's going to wither up, maybe even die. On the other hand, if you praise the plant, you pet the plant a little bit, play nice music, Mozart, not grunge music, the plant flourishes. Now we have an expert here who's taking care of a Tulsi plant. I've seen our Tulsi plant, now that's of course a spiritual plant. I've seen over my years here, I've been here for over 20 years, and this Tulsi has gone up and down. We almost lost Tulsi at one point. To do the puja, we'd have to look in her. We had one Tulsi growing, and we'd look into the leaves that had fallen that night And we have to use those to do. I was going on the altar at that time, maybe 10, 12 years ago. Now Tulsi is flourishing like anything. He brought one Tulsi in that it was like a tree. The leaves were practically dancing. They had manjaris. You could see it. It was ecstatic. And what's the difference? The difference is the caretaker and the consciousness, and plants have life. Even you see that famous the sunflower turns right to get to the sun. So it's rudimentary consciousness. These poor trees, they have to stand for so many years in the heat and the rain and the cold, and you know, some disease comes, they can't do anything about it, you know, some bugs come in to eat. You know, there's a conscious being in there. But because it's you know, very, very low consciousness, from moment to moment it's forgetting. It doesn't feel the pain of it. But there's a soul there. The same soul that is in us, in our body, is also in the tree, is in the insect, is in the bear, the cat, the dog, and all of these things. Wherever you see consciousness, you see there is a soul present. And there is a progression. It's not that someone is condemned, one soul is condemned to live in these lower species forever. Because the way it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita is that there's go back to the purport. There is another soul in the body, right? There is the observing soul, and it's upadrashta anumantacha. There's this phrase in the 13th chapter describing the super soul. Upadrashta means looking over, watching everything, you know, and anumanta, sanctioning. Yes, this soul is now free of so much what we call sinful reactions. Now you come to the human form of life, and it has some good karma coming. Basically means being kind to others, charitable, doing good for others, not being vicious and selfish. That's in general good karma. Then you get better. There's a better birth. You may be born in a very nice family, wealthy, good education, beauty, bodily beauty. These are some of the results of good karma. Bad karma, very vicious life, described in chapter 16 of this book. You can lose the human form of life. It's a great tragedy because human life is a chance to complete the evolutionary process and get out of the bondage of a physical body forever. Because it's a cycle. The soul never dies. But there's all these bodies. Well, where are they coming from? Well, the souls are coming one to another, one to another. We have no idea how many bodies we've been through. By the grace of the Lord, by the super soul's grace, we forget. When you can't forget, that's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. You go through some terrible thing in Iraq or Afghanistan, right? And that stays with you. You cannot forget it, and it haunts you. You saw someone kill the user. You know, I remember in my generation, it was Vietnam. So many, you know, we had 54,000 guys get killed, and who knows how many hundreds of thousands were injured and saw so many horrible things. And they couldn't, you know, they couldn't come back into normal society. So every time we go through this painful process of old age, disease, and death, assuming we don't die prematurely, those are your two choices. That's a great traumatic experience. And being born is also traumatic. That's also, you know. So by the grace of the Lord, we forget all that. We come in a new body, identify with it. Now I'm Chinese. I have a Chinese mother. I have a language, a whole different language, different experiences, right? Identify completely with that situation. This is actually the ontological position of the soul in the material world. So the mission, the goal, the preliminary goal, basic goal in all Vedic understanding, Eastern philosophy, includes Buddhism, you know, and other kinds of sects of what we call Hinduism, is getting free from this round of birth and death, samsara. If you don't have that understanding of your mission in life, and you get too absorbed in the material thing, then that's a great tragedy, a waste of human life. So that's the first lesson. That's why Krishna's emphasizing so much here, the difference between the soul and the body. Do not be illusioned into think that you are this body, that your identity is wholly and solely wrapped up with this. You know, we were man in the previous life, women in this life, human being in this life, dog in the next life. And it's going on for millions of births. how to stop it, how to break free. Human life is a chance. Very nice statement in the another book called the Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, Nirdeham Adyam, Sulabham Sudurlabham, Plavam Sukalpam, Guru Karna Dharam. Mayanukulena nabasviteritam puman bhavabdim natareit saat maha. We're just coming up on this verse in a morning class.
We passed it.
It just came up. So, nirdeham, human body, very special. Adya means full of all facilities for advancement. We have a good brain. The main thing is that we have intelligence. We can understand this. Cats and dogs can understand. Sulabham sudurlabham. This is a very nice phrase. And Krishna is speaking this verse in a different context. So sulabham and sudurlabham, these words mean opposite things. How can the same thing be described by two opposite terms? Sulabham means very easy to get. Sudurlabham means very difficult to get. So there must be some other meaning. So sulabham means that every soul eventually comes to the human life. You come up, 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 the different species, and eventually you come to this human life. So in that sense, it's sulabham. Everyone gets one. You know? But sudurlabham means it's rare. Just think, in this world, how many of us are there? Is it over 7 billion now, 6.5 billion? Something like that. Now think of how many mosquitoes there are, how many insects, how many blades of grass, how many cats and dogs. They far outnumber, isn't it? Billions and trillions and who knows how many. Even every germ, you know, is a soul. It's inconceivable, but it's true. So it's such a rare thing, such a rare gift. So that's what Krishna is saying. It's just like a boat. This life in this material world is compared sometimes to a forest fire, sometimes to an ocean, basically to a dangerous situation, full of great difficulty. Here we're near the ocean, so let's use the ocean. All right, the ocean is very nice. It comes as long as you're on the beach. I like the ocean. I don't like to go on the sea. I don't have to, you know. But just imagine you're out on a pleasure cruise, you know, out there, and suddenly, you know, there's a big storm comes up. You're thrown in the ocean. You're thrown in the ocean. Now what? I'm 30 miles from the shore. I may be a good swimmer, but you're in trouble, right? So that's our position here. We're in this ocean of birth and death. So we need a boat. And this human form of life is a good boat for that. So he says, Nirdeham Adyam, Sulabham Sudurlabham, Plavam Sukalpam. Plava means boat. Sukalpam, very nicely fashioned. It's a good boat. It's a boat that is seaworthy. But you need a captain. This is a sailboat, okay? So you need a captain. Otherwise, you just go around in circles. So that captain is the guru, the spiritual master, someone who knows to navigate and tell you go here, go there, and how to go. But you still need favorable winds. Even the captain can't do anything without the favorable winds. It's a sailboat. And that, the words of Krishna. In the scripture, like Bhagavad Gita, and other books like Srimad Bhagavatam, it's ultimately all Krishna's word. Vyasadeva is explained. So, Maya Nukulyena, it means by me, the favorable, Anukulyena, Nabasvitet, winds. So we've got the boat. We've got the captain, and we've got the favorable winds. So the last line says, Puman Bhavabdim Natarid. The Bhavabdi means the ocean of birth and death. Bhava means change. Have you noticed? You live in this world for a while. Everything changes. Nothing stays the same. You may wish it not to change, but it will change. Now that's also on the good side that says, well, if you're in pain, you're suffering, this too shall pass. It's from the Bible, right? Just be patient. Try to tolerate. But you should know that on the other side, if you have a good situation, I've got some money, I've got a healthy body, good relationships, I'm in good shape, that will also change. And eventually you'll have no money, you'll have no body. You know, good or bad. So we have to deal with that. So he says, therefore, the human being who does not cross over this ocean with the favorable winds, and the good boat, and the captain, is called Atmaha, committing spiritual suicide, is wasting this great treasure of human form of life. So how do we cross over? We have to learn. We have to learn the science, this knowledge. This is the purpose of human life. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. This is from a book called the Vedanta Sutra. Now, this person sitting here. This is a nice statue of our founder and spiritual guide, Srila Prabhupada. He wrote this book. I'm very fortunate to be his direct disciple. And his name contains this word in it, Bhakti Vedanta. Bhakti Vedanta. Veda Anta means the end of knowledge. Knowledge has a goal. It's not just let's expand it forever, and that's what we're doing. There's a certain goal to this knowledge, and the goal is bhakti. Bhakti is a word that means the exchange of loving devotion. Exchange of love. And if you think about it, that's really what makes life worth living. You may have all the money in the world, a big house, and all the prestige. If you have no one who can exchange love with, your life is empty and void. So even in this plane, ordinary life, I think we can admit that. Someone may be not so rich, but he has a nice family, you know, and loving children, wife, husband. There's happiness there. I point this out. Years ago, they do these surveys, the happiness quotient. Where is the country that has the most happiness? You know, they do. Are you feeling happy? How happy do you feel on a scale of 1 to 10? I like to do these things. The psychologist, sociologist. So you know the country that had the most happiness quotient? Bangladesh. Bangladesh? That, I mean, you know, they're all very poor there. And periodically they have these hurricanes, they call them typhoons, there or something. They come in and many people are killed, they lose their land. How are they the happiest? Well, because they have people who are living on, with an extended family, they have, they may be simple life, but somehow they're stable and they feel secure. So, but still, it's illusion. The point is, even that will ultimately change. But the essence of it is this loving exchange. People who you can love and return and you have closest to. So that's what bhakti is. When directed toward God, that bhakti is the exchange of love. It's not just a one-way street. God is supreme. He's the controller. He's so great. That's certainly true. So how is he going to have time for me? I'm just this atomic soul. We just read that several times. We're very infinitesimal. You can't find us with a microscope. It's, tiny. But we're conscious and we're eternal. So how does the infinite have time for the infinitesimal? Because part of the infinite nature of God is that he is infinitely merciful and he can expand and have a personal relationship with an infinite number of people. We can't. We try it on Facebook, right? Ooh, I have 100 friends, 200 friends. But it's illusory. Do you really know anything about them? Is there some real exchange, meaningful, on this, with those pixels bouncing around in there? What is it? It's an illusion. You see, you're trying to be like Krishna. That's our problem. So, but Krishna really can do it through as super soul, as himself. And so each one of us can have this completely fulfilling loving relationship with the Supreme by the process of bhakti. And that process includes all of this knowledge. The first thing is we have to stop trying to have these fulfilling relationships, eternal relationships, with temporary bodies. To understand. It's not that we immediately have to give up all the relationships, but we have to understand in perspective that our ultimate person who we're related to is the Supreme. Here we're talking about the bird and the tree, right? So visualize this. This body is like a tree. It almost looks like a tree sometimes, isn't it? So what does that mean? There are fruits of the tree. Who remembers what the fruits of the tree? Did you go? Okay.
Love of God.
No.
Fruits of the tree?
Yeah.
Of the body?
Huh?
Fruits of our activity? And the good karma and the bad karma.
The fruits of the tree are the sense of pleasure, sense gratification. The individual bird is sitting on this tree. And what is he doing? He's trying to eat the fruits. Well, what's the fruits? Some little pleasure you get. Okay, we have five senses. You see things nice. You taste things that are pleasurable. Who can deny it? And there's sound. We have these five senses. With a certain configuration, it's pleasurable. But we know that there's also a lot of configurations that is not so pleasurable. But anyway, the individual bird, he doesn't even know about the other bird. He's forgotten. He's just trying to eat those fruits, and going on from one tree to another, And meanwhile, the witness bird, upadrashta means a witness, I've quoted it. He's watching, watching, watching. Now, in a deeper sense, that super soul bird is also giving the opportunity to this individual bird. Because ultimately, the super soul of Krishna, he's making all these arrangements. Where does all this stuff come from? All of this matter that we're now so absorbed in. You know? It's all coming from the absolute truth. This is another thing in the Vedanta Sutra. Remember I mentioned the Vedanta Sutra? And Vedanta means the end of knowledge. So, the first injunction is, as echoed in this verse from Bhagavatam about the boat of the body crossing the ocean, is that the whole point is we have to inquire into this Brahman. Brahman is the absolute truth, the source of everything. That's the next. What is the source of everything? Where did I come from? Ultimately, you know, not just who are my parents. I don't just want to know my family tree for a few generations. I want to know, ultimately, where I came from and what's the meaning of it all. Is there a meaning? If not, I want to know that for sure. You know, without asking those questions, then we just basically lead animal life. You know, just trying to, you know, survive in this world. Eating, sleeping, you know, mating, having sleeping and sex life, and fighting. So, that inquiry into the ultimate goal of things, that ultimately must lead to a person. Because the effect, just think about it. Everything that we experience from day to day is a series of causes and effects, right? Scientifically, you know? This building, for instance, there's a bunch of causes. The first cause is an idea. Somebody has an idea, I want to build a building. Usually the motive is, I want to make money, right? That's pretty much the default mode. Right? Let's you know, it's good land, we can make some, we build, I think it was a theater at one point, or something. Okay, we build it. But someone has to have the idea, comes up with a blueprint, someone who knows what he's doing so a building won't fall down, right? So that's, call that the original cause of this building, for now. But then there are other causes. There also has to be money. You have to have the wherewithal. So maybe as an investor, that's part of the cause, an important part. Then you have the workers who are going to build it. You have the materials that are going to be into it, right? So you have all of these series of causes, and then you have the effect, the building. Okay? Now that's true of so many things, the cars, everything you look at. Now why, now when you go back and back, but you keep going back, you come to what we call the cause of all causes. Which doesn't, that thing which has no cause. So now there can't be anything in this building that isn't also there in the causes. Everywhere you look, say, well, what about these paintings? At a certain point, obviously, the Hare Krishnas took it over. So we also did something to the building that resulted in what you see here. Right? All of these statues and the everything. So there was somebody's idea and activity also went into that. So the point is, nothing in this building that you find can be more than the sum total of the causes. You have the ideas, you have the materials, you have the colors, you have the lighting, all of the stuff that goes into it. So similarly, in this whole world, there can't be anything that we experience now that isn't there in the ultimate cause. And one of the things that we experience is personality. Each one of us is an individual. We have a form, we have a name, we have activities, we have qualities, we have desires. Everything that goes into making a personality, each of us is familiar with it. That has to be there in the ultimate cause. Otherwise, where did it come from? Consciousness. This is we're conscious beings. The original has to be conscious. Otherwise, how did it come about? The scientists want to try to make up this whole scenario, how consciousness somehow grew up from something unconscious. But it doesn't work that way. Consciousness is obviously superior to unconscious matter. I'm a conscious being. I'm moving around all of this dead matter. This body is dead. It looks alive because I'm inside and I'm moving it around. As soon as I, the soul, leave the body, it becomes dead matter and has to be disposed of. It reverts back to the earth and the water, whatever's in there, liquids. It's clear. It's obvious. We forget that. So, therefore, Everything that we have, including our loves, our desires, our laughter, our skills, our attractive nature, has to be in the Supreme. And so if God is all-powerful and can create all this stuff, why not all-beautiful? Any reason? There's no reason. Why? There has to be a source of this beauty. Each of us has a little personal beauty for a little bit of time in our life, and then it kind of fades away and goes away. Right? We try to preserve it, you know, do so many things to make ourselves. So there must be some source of the ultimate beauty, the standard of beauty. You know? So that's Krishna. And in our sojourn throughout this world, as we go from body to body, we are always trying to reach that point that we've lost, you know, we've forgotten. And that is that place of, you know, ultimate beauty and happiness and peace and love that cannot be found in this world. You cannot find peace in a place that's burning down, that is going to be destroyed. You can have the illusion of peace for some time, but it'll never be satisfying. Because we as spiritual beings are eternal, and we're also full of knowledge, and we're also full of bliss. But who in this room can say, I'm always full of bliss, I never feel sad, you know, I never go through any suffering? No one. No one in this whole world can say that. But that's who we want to be. That's the state we want to reach. So getting from here to there is the process of yoga. Sadhana bhakti, dharma, all of these things you hear about. That's the only goal. Any preliminary goal, all this hatha yoga and bending and stretching, fine. You can have a healthy body for a while, for a few years, which is an infinitesimal instant in your long sojourn of millions of lifetimes. So what's the point of wasting? You know, yoga is such a valuable thing. Can actually give you success of using it for some temporary purpose. Yes, you can have a sleek, healthy body, but if that's your goal, you're wasting it. Use your body for cross over the ocean. It's a very good, you know, facility for that. So these kind of verses are very nice because they very clearly, you know, if you just accept it, okay, I understand. The body's going to get old, just like an old coat. I'm going to take it off and put on a new body. So death loses its mystery and horror, because if you think, oh my God, you know, there's this great abyss, I don't know where I'm going, I don't know what's going to happen to me. You know, death is simply a change of clothes. Now, the point is, how can we act in such a way between now and when we have to leave this body, and all of us are going to have to face it, young and old, when we can get the best destination? Doesn't that make sense? Assuming this philosophy is true and everything isn't just atoms in the void, you know, and nobody's really here, like the Buddha said, nothing really exists. Does anyone want to think like that? It's crazy. How can we act best that here, from now until that time, or maybe 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we can do and form our consciousness in such a way, because what you do every moment of your life is recorded in your mind. And that subtle body of yours called the mind is what's going to be the template of your next gross body. If you act viciously, you act like a dog, you know, you simply let the senses run riot, forget about the future, then you don't need a human body. You don't deserve a human body. And you won't have a human body. You know? You'll be in a dog body or something. It's a very painful situation. But we don't want that. You know, that's a disaster. That's called the great fear, Mahato Bayat. You know, lose this human body. So by approaching the external guru who simply teaches you about the internal guru. Remember, there's the super soul is trying to tell us, give us good advice, but we're not listening. That bird is just absorbed in the fruit. It doesn't want to hear from the super soul bird. Okay, so the super soul bird comes outside the tree, and he comes as in the form of the spiritual master, you know, or in the form of these books, is giving this knowledge. That's a chance. If you still want to ignore it, hey, we're all free to do whatever we want. Yateshasitatakuru. This is our freedom, especially in human life. You have more independence. If you misuse that independence, then you can lose the independence. Just like a criminal, you know, an ordinary citizen, we have so many freedom. I can go to New York if I want right now. I can go to India. You know, I have so much freedom. But if I commit some crime, I lose that. I'm locked up. Now my freedom consists of walking from here to that side of the cell. That's prison house. So that's a lower form of life. We don't want that. We want to increase our freedom and to the point of you know, ultimately getting free of the bonds, of the shackles of matter. That's the mission of the spirit soul. That's the meaning of life. You know? The meaning of life isn't just to forever wonder about what is the meaning of life. You know, that's what I thought when I was a student in college. You know, this is fun, staying up all night, you know, and going to the coffee shop. What is this old man? Here's Socrates, Plato, here's Kierkegaard, Heidegger. We figured it out. No. You know, we have to face the facts. The end of knowledge is God, is Krishna, the ultimate truth. That's the only worthy goal for human endeavor. Everything else is just a dream. It's all going to end. And I was saying the other day, was it this morning maybe, that Maya or illusory energy is very skilled at making us think that the things which really are not important at all are really, really important. And that which is the most important is insignificant. And it's just like a child. You know, remember when we were like 10? What do I care about politics and everything? Forget it. You know, where's my bike? You know, nowadays, you know, what's the latest video game or something? That's really what's important. You know, to the point where I don't even want to eat. You know, that's you get your mind involved in that. This is the illusory energy. The most important thing is our spiritual life, and people don't even know it exists. You know, they have no idea. So that's why great saints like Srila Prabhupada and his forebears make a great effort to somehow or other interest some intelligent souls in this eternal philosophy, so we can get the clue and get the begin to wake up. This is like uttishta jagrata prapavarana nibodhata. This is from the Vedas. Wake up, uttishta jagrata. Get up, wake up to the great value of this human life. Varan means a benediction. Don't waste it. You know, it's like an injunction. Tamasima, jyotirgama, gamaha. Don't stay in darkness, go to the light. Enlightenment. What is enlightenment? It means knowledge. It means, you know, really waking up to what's the real reality. Don't stay in this world of death. Go to the world, the eternal world. Mrityuma, amrityum. And what's the other one? Asatoma, satgamaya. This is where this is called the asat. A few verses back, Krishna says, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. So for the asat, which is all this matter, the change, there's no real existence. It's like a dream. Many of us had a dream last night. I forgot what I had. I usually dream at night. But while you're in the dream, sometimes you wake up and you remember them. You know, so whoa, that was a nice dream, or that was a pretty bad dream. I'm glad it's over. Or nice dream. I wish it would continue. But it's a dream. Ultimately, it doesn't mean anything. I have to go about my daily life. It's just a dream, right? But while you're in the dream, it can be very real to you, isn't it? You can have so many emotions, you could be sweating and other things. You know? So similarly, this is a daydream. Just during our day, this is reality. No, it's another dream. And I like to point out, this is one of the advantages of getting older, that you know, I can go back and you know, there's a few high points, emotional high points, that I can remember details of 30, 40, even 50 years ago or more, you know. But what's the significance? How is that memory? I can remember, okay, the first thing, I'm riding my bicycle, my tricycle, I'd rather, you know. I'm about 4 or 5 years old. So what's the significance of that? Or some of the other things I experienced all these years? It's gone, never to be repeated. It doesn't really pertain to me now. Right? It's no more significant than the dream we had last night. And yet while you're in it, right, the present moment or a little past, oh, this is really, really important. But just try to see things in perspective. What's really important is what is our program for extricating ourselves, our soul, from the bondage of matter, from the bondage of this material world. And that's where bhakti comes in, the bhakti yoga. It's a program for which we redirect our attention to the eternal reality, the all attractive personality of God, and the world, the spiritual world, kingdom of God, which is full of all of these eternal, fulfilling, loving exchanges. Remember, that's what I said. That's really what makes life worth living. And it's at a stage, and the happiness there we can hardly even imagine. That's our destination, and that's where we came from. We're now exiles from there. Most of the souls are still there. There's like a smaller percentage who are here. So how to get faith in that? We have to associate with the faithful. Therefore, we should read Prabhupada's books. These books, like the Bhagavad Gita, we have many other books. Srila Prabhupada is revealing this to us. Someone who has seen the truth can instill faith in this. And we can begin to see in perspective what our real goal in life is. So any questions or discussion on these few points? Bhakta Ben.
To some extent, I understand exactly what Krishna is saying. You illustrated it very nicely. Thank you for the wonderful class.
But
I completely agree with with Krishna. I agree with you. But like you were saying with like waking up, like I'll be awake to the knowledge and it'll seem so clear and so evident, and then I'll start to get drowsy.
Yes.
And I'll start to get in even engaging in bhakti yoga, like I'll be thinking like, oh, samsara dal, you know, yeah, you know, the ocean of mercy, spiritual master just pouring the mercy down, and some days I'll just be thinking, man, if only I had 15 more minutes of sleep, that would be. So yeah, how do we stay awake?
This is called the modes of nature, and this is the way that the material energy works. It's something like a drug or alcohol. Many of us have had the experience, you know, of taking some of these drugs, and you're not yourself, right? If someone like gets drunk, they're not themselves anymore, you know, and they don't even know it, right? They're in a different state because the mind, the brain has been affected, the conscience has been affected, and they'll do things and say things that they ordinarily wouldn't do. They'll forget their real self, so to speak. So it's just like that. The because we're habituated, you know. It's just like someone who's been taking a drug for a long time may come to the point that this is not good, I'm ruining my life, so I have to change. And you may go to a facility where you'll get good association and be able to clean up. I got clean, right? But these purple people know, luckily I've never been in that situation, that if you then get into some bad situation again, you know, that you may fall back into that habit and get covered over again, and you're back in your old life and habits of identity. So that's just like what it is. Because with so many years, so many lifetimes of acting in this way, therefore it's easy for us to fall back into it. And that's why we need a discipline. It's a yoga discipline. Good association, good instruction, to strengthen our will so that we do those things that keep us in that a mood of knowledge and understanding and able to act in the right way. But like so many other disciplines, eventually it becomes second nature to you, what we call spontaneous. I remember an example of this is when I learned to play an instrument. I don't know, many of us have learned to play a musical instrument. So there's a lot of practice. You know, the nervous system, the mind is not used to what you have to do to play the guitar or another instrument. But the goal is there. Oh, I want to make nice music, right? And so you go through the practice and the arpeggios and everything that you have to do until eventually it's just second nature, right? Like I used to play this little instrument called the recorder. I still play the flute, you know? So I can pick it up and you know, the sound comes out. And there you know, it goes, and plays some music. Whereas someone else picks it, oh, I like to do that. I've seen it, you know. Let me try it, okay? They can't even get a sound out of it. And if they do get a sound, it's not music, right? So it's like that. We're so habituated to acting in this ignorant way and in this self-destructive way that if we're not careful, that mood will come again, you know, unto us. It will start acting that way. So this is where the intelligence comes in. That the intelligence is strengthened by hearing, by reading this knowledge, and by acting on it. And by that intelligence, then you get the will to act the way you should do. You know, and you know, if you get strong, then it becomes habitual, and it's not as hard to do anymore, and you can more easily stay on the transcendental platform. But we can see it's instructive. I was reading this is a great saintly lady named Kunti Devi. She's a queen, and she has these prayers in the Bhagavatam in the 8th chapter, 1st canto. And I was reading them with my friends in Columbus recently, Columbus, Ohio. I was visiting there. And very beginning of her prayer, she has this prayer called Maya Jibani Kachanam Agyarokcha Jamabhiyam Nalakshase Buddha Dasha Nato Nachadaro Yata. So the Jibani Kacha is a curtain, you know, and Maya is this illusory curtain. So we pull it over our own eyes, really, by wanting to forget Krishna, wanting to forget the Super Soul, wanting to forget all. We just want to enjoy. Forget about it all. Let's just sit and enjoy. You know, you see that, who cares about tomorrow? You know, let's get drunk today, have a ball. You know, I'll worry about that tomorrow. You know? So that desire to enjoy immediately, that's more and more an animal life. Because tomorrow will come, and you will feel the effects of it. And then you'll be sorry, oh, why did I take that drug so many years? Now, you know, I'm messed up. But during the time, you're in the, you know, let's enjoy. You see? So the intelligent person controls the senses, you know, for the ultimate good, the ultimate happiness. Yes, we want to enjoy, but why don't you go for the ultimate enjoyment? Brahma Saukya, which is ananta, which is endless. If you do it right, if you get the willpower to do it right and undergo the discipline, you'll come to the point of endless enjoyment and for eternity. Who can deny? Who can not at least investigate that? So hearing about that and practicing gives us the strength so that we may become illusioned a little bit, but you come back and you keep doing what's right. This is the process of bhakti yoga, centering on the chanting of the holy name, which we're about to experience. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.